Welcome to another episode of RTFM, the RPG Book Club podcast. Monster season trundles on eviscerated, legless, reanimated zombie pulling itself toward your ears on its clawed and dirty fingernails. I almost forgot the name of the podcast. I was like, welcome to... my name is Aaron. The other day I was working at the store I work at, and I had been listening to some Childish Gambino, and they called, and I answered, and I said, this is America. So that's kind of where my brain is at.
That's so good.
So stupid.
That's so good. I am Max, Irvine Max. I'm excited that you got us through an intro that actually reminded everybody that we're in monster season, because we keep forgetting to mention that it's monster season and then just talking about like monsters but never introing that.
Right.
Today we have a new friend to me. Sen, do you want to introduce yourself? Tell us interesting things about you.
Yes, hello. I am Sen. I make comics and tattoos. So I spend most of my time drawing. And most of that time spent drawing is spent on my webcomic Skybane. I like RPGs, and I read a lot more of them than I play.
Yes, that's a separate hobby.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Give people a URL just so they can quickly. You'll have a chance to do it again, but
yeah, you can check out my webcomic at skybanecomic.com. And you can follow me on Instagram at goth.holiday. That's where my tattoo stuff goes. So, yeah.
Sweet. And we met at Zine Fest, right?
We sure did.
And have played Dungeons and Dragons and The Veil. And did we play a World of Darkness game together?
We played some one shot, and I don't remember what it was.
Me either. It was a fun game. No,
it was. It was very fun, and I don't remember what it was played it under.
When I become a player, I get to forget anything about the game I'm playing and just do what I feel the whims tell me to do, which is a very nice feeling for me. Speaking of nice feelings, I don't know. Today, we are reading Monster of the Week. It's Powered by the Apocalypse game by Michael Sands, published by Evil Hat in 2015, the revised edition that we're reading. It was first published in 2012, I think self-published. If you haven't listened to the Apocalypse World episode that we did, you can go ahead and listen to that to find out more about Powered by the Apocalypse games. We're probably not going to retread the kind of basic facts about those. It's a game inspired by Buffy and Supernatural and X-Files and Hellboy, where you hunt monsters. Like a big part of the game explicitly says hunters make moves to find the monster and defeat it. Like, it seems very laser focused on those two things.
Yeah, it also says later on, like, it frames itself as like an investigation game. Like, it's like most of your play will be in hunting stuff down and investigating a mystery. While also then at some point it does say this game is not all about hunting down a mystery. It's about players. So there's some confusing messaging happening in there, but it does say that like it always ends in a fight.
Yes.
So that's like an ever present. That's the jam. It's not to find, it's not Monster of the Week, your best friend. Right. I don't think there are any friendship. No friends, only fighting.
Which is sad.
Right? Which is also like not the Buffy way, but whatever. That's fine. We'll talk about it.
I've only watched the first season of Buffy, and I don't really remember much about it.
I've watched it a lot.
Yeah, me too.
Which is different than saying that I loved it. I'm sure we'll get into that, but I've watched it a lot, and that's very different than saying I am a Buffy fan. Yeah. Some of the times in which I have watched it have been somewhat against my will, because I don't know. I was a lesbian once. I've dated a lot of Buffy fans. Those things feel like they go hand in hand. But the game does some Buffy stuff. It has a boatload of playbooks. Or what felt like a boatload of playbooks, all kind of they're meant to be archetypes, and that's like your jam. Like you, there can only be one of each playbook in a party, because you are meant to be that character. As if you are in the movie script or the television script, and you are fulfilling like a role that is needed by the story, not kind of the. It's kind of like the, in my mind, that was kind of the first kind of noteworthy thing about it, is that it's not, how do you want to make your like super unique little guy, which of course you can do, but it is framed within this, you need to be the expert, or you need to be the mundane, or like that is, your job is to play to these stereotypes, really. Yeah.
I like the playbooks for the most part. I would play any of them.
I like that they each have their own, like they each have, or most of them have like some unique mechanic that comes into play for them, or some like unique little part. Like it, the playbooks are not the same, like even like they're not the same template. They have different qualities, some of them, right? Like some of them will have like the Chosen has its fate, which is like different and might apply some tags that come into play at different moments. Yeah, and that's kind of fun, because they do feel like they're all very... I think I've said this before, but like one of my pet peeves in games is a lot of overlapping skill sets. Like if you're going to have classes, which are effectively what playbooks are, then I kind of want them to be super unique.
Can I ask you both which playbook you wish you were in real life and which one you regret you actually are?
I'm just going to get this out of the way and say, obviously the monster. Obviously the monster is both. That's my answer to both, is the monster. I don't know if that's true, but it felt comedic, so I'm sticking with it.
There are so many playbooks. Hold on. I got to pull up the playbooks because I do not remember all of them.
There is a list in the table of contents page, if that's the easiest way.
Nice. I found.
I mean, I want to be the mundane. I just want to be a normal. What's that puppet dog say? We're just normal men. We're just innocent men. But I worry that I am the flake, which is the character that's like terminally online and always asking their online friends for help and opinions.
I may or may not be the wronged in real life. I'm just grudges.
What is the monster
I've just
that
made
wronged you?
Exclusively the world, the man. This is the please see former episodes of Bluebeard's Bride and
Blood Feud
and Blood Feud. But I can't. I feel like revenge driven is not that far from me as a person. So here we are.
I think I have to say that I would want to be, like, I don't know, the spooky, probably, right? It's just, that's my whole, I'm soft goth, that's my whole thing. I want magic powers, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like I'm just a normal person. So, like, either the mundane or maybe the expert, but not about monsters and magic. Just, I've read too many RPG books, and also... my expertise is drawing, so
it's true.
That's what I got.
I like the idea of wanting to be the spooky and actually being the expert, because you're like, I know a lot about magic, but I could do fucking none of it. Thank you.
No, that's very accurate, because in this world where there is not that magic for me to learn,
yeah,
I am the expert, right? I read all the fantasy things, but in the world, I could be the spooky.
I feel like the expert is just shorthand for like Wiccans, but that's just my bad way of being. It's like you know a lot of stuff. You can do fucking diddly. Sorry if I offend the Wiccans that listen to this.
Shout out to our Wiccan listeners.
I was once one of you. You raise kids weird. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like, so I have actually, again, I have played this game, so that's fun.
Oh yeah, me too.
Which rarely happens. In listening to our Ennie's highlight reel, I realized that like I frequently am like, haven't played this one, and then when I had played a game, I was like, this is the first time I've said this. We were like 10 episodes in, and I was like, I've played this game. But yeah, I have played this one. It like was pretty early on in my PBTA exposure. And so, like, was still struggling a little bit with how moves work, I think, in general. Yeah, I don't know. It is one of my comments, one of my notes that I took is that there are 96 pages until you get to the game is a conversation section of this book. Right. And I hate that.
I do.
100 pages. What is a game, though?
I do feel like it could have been remixed a little. I feel like there are like multiple sections where it talks about threats and making threats, and I feel like it could have been, this is what we say about every game, right? It could have been 10% shorter and kind of reshuffled to make more sense.
This game could have been 90% shorter. This is, well, because it's not like, it's not complex. Like, that's why it's like, I was preparing for this episode, I was like, I don't know what I'm going to say. It's not complex. There's a bunch of rules. There's a bunch of playbooks. They're pretty, if you are familiar with PBTA, there's nothing super complicated that's going to trip you up in playing it. And that goes for a lot of the advice and the threats and stuff. It feels like a lot of it is, if you've read Apocalypse World, a lot of this is like a thin sheet over rephrasing Apocalypse World, and usually not for the better.
Wow. I thought the GM advice was fine again.
Yeah, fine. I thought the GM advice in Apocalypse World is good. This is fine.
Yeah. But it's like, it's some of it's specific to this game. They talk about like arcs and stuff and the different ways to like hint at monster threats. I thought was neat, and like the sample locations that can kind of make their own moves, I enjoyed.
Yeah, I mean, they have this framework. They present a template, a framework for like making threats, whether that is, and making like adventures. And then I think for me, it was like, I don't need the arc section because you just took the adventure framework and you expanded it over time. So just say to make a longer adventure, expand your adventure framework over time. Look, here's it's done. Example. I reduced 40 pages of this book.
So I will say, I thought the book is very long. It's
so long.
320 pages. and definitely a lot of that is the keeper and just sort of like examples and like going through that. So I feel like as someone reading through this, I was like, oh my God, how are there still 150 more pages of this book? but that said, so I've never actually GM'd a game
Led
a game or whatever. No, I haven't.
I had no idea.
I keep thinking about it and talking about it and then not doing it and writing up these detailed notes about what's going to happen and then just not doing it. So as someone who's never done that, the keeper section actually did feel super helpful to me, because I feel a little intimidated on running a game. And so all the like structure examples, I was like, okay, cool. Like, and it's all like, because it is very like archetype heavy, trope heavy, I feel like, you know, I could just pull like my recollection of an episode of Buffy or.
Right. You are the expert already.
Yeah. Exactly. I have so many things to pull Werewolf. On Boom. That I can very much like slot that stuff in and be like, cool, I'm ready to run this now, you know?
Yeah. I do worry that Max and I are becoming like, I'm pretty sure neither of you drink, but I assume you've been around people and it's like, I'm the beer expert. I need quadruple hops to even like wake me up in the morning, and I don't get off for less than 10% ABV in my beer. Like, I worry that we are becoming that for RPGs.
I was recently talking about how weed people are the worst people in the entire earth.
And similar.
It's very similar.
You know, there's a podcast out there with two people that talk about a weed strain every 2 weeks, and they have a guest on.
Just the worst.
And we are them and they are us.
I think, I mean, that might be true. Like, yes, I think I'm starting to feel a little bit like jaded about welcome, Sen. We're going to process our feelings about the podcast in general. We thought you were coming here to talk about this specific book, and now you're going to help us work through our shit.
Love it.
But I do think that, like, I do think the perspective of reading these books as like people who aren't reading these books all the time or have different play experiences is like super valuable. I guess I just also am like, we have applauded GM advice in other games, you know? Like, we have, I think it becomes hard when, like, games like this, I was thinking about this when I was reading it, and games like this for me feel like a D&D off-ramp, and I think those kinds of games hold much less appeal and much less, like, interesting stuff to critically engage with. I feel like this is a problem with, like, a lot of Evil Hat, generally. And a lot of those, like, mid-tier publishers. I don't, what do we call those publishers? It's like just not Wizards of the Coast, you know, like it's everything. Like it can't, anything that is smaller than Wizards is like very big, I feel, but like they're not indie publishers, you know, like it's like whatever. I don't know what to call them.
Yeah, but I think D&D off-ramp is like, we should have those.
Totally.
And I think, yeah.
I think that's, oh, I totally think that's true. I think we should have them. I think that, like, yes, we probably, you and I are not the audience for them, even a little bit. And, like,
if D&D is the interstate, I'm, like, living off the grid, the off-ramp. You still need to drive another 2 hours to reach me. I'm crouched in a little bunker somewhere.
Yeah, and, like, the games, to me, the games feel so designed in conversation with D&D. Like, they feel not, like, this game feels not dissimilar to reading, like, 13th Age or whatever, and where, like, so much of that book is just responding to, like, third edition. And a lot of this book feels like it's responding to contemporary D&D. And so a lot of the advice about, like, how to set up and structure, like, a lot of the advice felt like it was at odds with itself, because so much of this book says, like, it's open-ended, let the characters direct where things go, they're going to come up with stuff you don't know, which is all true, right? And then it would be like, and here's how to structure your adventure.
Right. Here's each monster how to plan still only has arc. One weakness, and you need to learn the weakness in order to defeat it.
Yeah, in order to even, like, fight them, you have, like, you, the idea that you would put a monster in and be like, you cannot defeat this monster until you find out that it's allergic to garlic or whatever. And then, and my brain is just like, oh, I bet that stalls out sometimes for people, you know, like that.
I've both played and run this game, and it does stall out.
And it feels like not helpful advice. So it's interesting. Sen, you have to go GM this now, because what I want to know is, like, if the comfort in reading it actually plays out to being useful tools when applying it. Mm-hmm. That's, like, one of the things that I find kind of interesting in reading these books, you know, is like, mm-hmm. oh, okay, I feel like I'm getting some ideas. I feel comforted. I feel supported. Because for me, one of my, like, biggest difficulties with thinking that I'm an okay GM is reading GM advice in books like D&D and then going to play a session and feeling totally without any scaffolding. Mm-hmm. And then being like, am I the problem? Because the book said I was supposed to have all this preparation done and I did that, and I was supposed to have all this shit and I did that, and the session's still kind of bleh, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I do wonder, again, that's not just about this game, but, like, I do wonder if those things always translate, because when I still have that, like, oh, am I an okay GM? Because all of this GM advice that I've read from all of these books, I've done all the things that they've told me to do. And then the actual thing that comes up in a session is four people being like, I want to create chaos. And me being like, none of that prepared me for chaos, you know?
No, totally. I think actually now that you remind me of how it does say, like, but it's open-ended. Follow the players, which, like, that is good GM advice, right? Like, because it's all about the players. You have to focus on the players and what they want to do. But it is at odds with this is the structure, this is what happens, this is your, like, hook, and then this is what the monster does, and then this is what happens if, you know, how the monster reacts. That feels helpful for writing.
Totally.
What's going to happen, right? Or for, like, for creating a little story or a little comic about, like, this sort of episodic monster of the week type of story, right? But then actually playing it with people, human people, who often like to sow chaos into the things that they play, then I'm like, I think that at that point I'd be like, I don't know how to continue this without railroading you back into this structure that I've created, which is specifically not what I'm trying, or not what I'm wanting to do, right?
Yeah.
Well, part of that would ideally be making clear at the start, like, this is about hunting and defeating a monster. If you want to do something else, let me know right now, and I'll put this on the shelf and get a different game. But, like, that's kind of what you're doing. And I think the game does do some kind of fun, you know, with the examples, like, plays within that frame. Like, they do a thing where, like, the monster is a minion of a more powerful person, but they stat the powerful person is the minion because that's not who you're trying to defeat. They do the thing where, like, the person that the scientist is the monster and his weakness is monologuing. You have to get through his monologue before you can defeat him. Like, I think the game kind of recognizes how kind of tightening that can be, that structure, and tries to show, like, here are a few ways that you can play around.
I loved the monologue thing. That's one of the notes that I wrote down, was gloating monologue, just because I thought that was such a fun weakness and such a fun, like, how that fight could play out if that's what they have to go through first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, counterpoint. No, I think the monologuing's great. But one of my notes was, like, the templates would have been really useful if they were actual templates, because they're not. They're just a person talking about a template. But, like, give me a form. And the game could really use some pick or roll lists. And to monologues as a weakness is a great pick list. And just, like, I don't need 700 pages to get to the point where you give me that one little snippet of goodness. Because, like, a thing that I'm thinking as you guys are talking about this is, like, I believe that the person who wrote this game knows how to run a fun Monster of the Week game.
Yeah.
Michael and knows Sands, how to write,
get at us.
Well, and knows how to, like, write interesting scenarios, right? But that's so different than GM advice.
Right.
That, like, writing good GM advice or writing a good game that scaffolds that. Like, this to me has the same problem with D&D, where it's like trying to do the, this game can be anything, but no, it's actually just this really small thing. Because, like, if you just tell me Monster of the Week is, we are going to play through a weekly episode of a television show. I have created the monster. There is a way, like, there will always be, you are effectively trying to solve a puzzle, right? This isn't an open freeform story game. You are trying to solve a puzzle, because that's what this game is. You're trying to solve a puzzle. It's always going to end in a fight, and in order to win that fight, you have to discover the weakness. Those are constant conditions of play here. If you tell me that right up at the front, you tell me it's not open-ended like that, I'm still in. I'm not like, no, I'm leaving, you know? Like, because that is what Buffy is, right? Like, it is, how do we find its weakness? What's behind it? How do we make it go away? It is like a puzzle and deduction game. And if you tell me that, like, it's going to be a little bit more railroady because of that, I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm in. I'm not
leaving.
I feel
like the game does tell us that. I think, I wonder what the first edition was like. It was shorter. I have not looked at it, but, like, we found the page count. I wonder if the first edition was much more upfront and was like, here's what you're going to do. Players, keep that in mind. Here's the playbooks. Here's some, you know, 5 pages of GM advice, and then just an appendix at the end of examples. Like, I'm imagining that is the book. That's the perfect version of this for me. And I wonder if when it moved to a real publisher, there was a bit of like, well, we want to appeal to more people. Like, we want to have our cake and eat it too. Let's talk a little bit about, like, you know, there's team concepts that they get on, but they don't really do much. They just say, you could have a team concept. Here's 3 people that might be on this team, but there's nothing actually, like, fun or gameable in that. I know there's a new expansion coming out that has, like, actual team playbooks that sound really cool. But yeah, I wonder if it was just sort of like, well, you have a great framework here, but we publish 200 to 300 page A5 books. Let's fill this out with some, like, hints of future options, but not actually change the game that much.
Yeah. I also think it's like, how old is this game? You said that
2015.
Already, right? It feels, I don't know when the first 2015? One was.
Yeah.
That feels like a lifetime ago.
I mean, it's 8 years ago.
Yeah. There's just like a lot of games that, like, I was thinking about this and I was like, you know what I'd love? And this would never work because publishers couldn't sell it this way. I remember when we started doing this podcast and we were reading Traveler, which is an episode that almost didn't make it to air. And Traveler comes in a bunch of little different books. And I think it was my copy of Traveler kept referencing another version of something. There was some book early on that was like, you, in order to play this, you need this other book that you don't currently have. Yeah. And I was so irritated by it. But that was years ago. I'm a different person now. I'm irritated by even more new things.
I have sworn vengeance on three new things.
Yeah, exactly. But like, because this does, it feels like a skin of Apocalypse World, and but it feels like a skin of Apocalypse World in a way that some Apocalypse World games or some PBTA games don't feel like skins of Apocalypse World.
Bluebeard's Bride is very far away.
Right? Yeah. Like it's so, and like, you know, anything that came. Anything that calls itself PBTA that's in the like belonging outside belonging framework, right, or, you know, Blades in the Dark or whatever, right? Like these are like evolutions of the ideas of these games. Whereas Monster of the Week is a series of tools to play Apocalypse World. And I was like, I think I would be down for this if it was a pamphlet, if it was a zine that was like Apocalypse World Monster Edition, you know, like,
yeah,
there's,
and maybe the original was, I don't know.
I think probably a lot of small projects are, right? Like they're kind of, there is a lot of assumed knowledge, which maybe doesn't help send like folks like you who are like, I don't know what, I'm scared. I have a fear. I still have a fear. I've read games a lot. I still have the fear all the time. But you can't market a product that's incomplete like that, you know, even if that is the best version of the product. That's not the point. Yeah, and like, again, I didn't hate it. It's just, it is so wordy and so long that I lost what was good about it in reading that much, you know?
Like signal to noise, right? Like,
yeah,
there's a lot of noise and not a lot of, yeah.
I think there's like good shit in there. Like, I do like the playbooks have kind of these fun little unique things in them, like the monstrous one has to like feed sometimes, or which I think
my
is
favorite
like you have
is
a curse.
The mundane, who's just like the normal friend, like in all these things, there's always just like, I'm just the normal friend. I'm just the person. I don't believe in
what
all
am
this
I doing
stuff.
Here?
They get an experience point every time they're captured by a monster.
I love
yes,
that.
I think that's one of my favorite.
So funny.
So it's in there, right? Like the good stuff is in there. It's just very hard to find. Also because like some of the threat stuff, like there's a lot of repetition and that makes it really hard to keep reading. Like there are what feel like literal copy paste paragraphs in various parts.
Yeah.
Of the book. But yeah, I don't know. Has the somebody say a positive thing. That's not me.
So while we're on playbooks a little bit, I really liked the use of archetypes and tropes. I just like the mundane and getting the XP when captured or going off on their own. I thought that was really fun. And it's just like then plays into that trope, right? And similarly, I can't remember, it's probably The Chosen, but has like a big entrance move. So when you make a showy entrance into a dangerous situation, you roll plus cool, and then everyone has to stop to watch and listen until
that's
you finish
very
your
good
opening speech. Yes, I liked that a lot.
I like that pairing off with the monologue. Like those things being at odds. The character that's trying to be really showy and the character that like has to monologue in order to be defeated.
Yes, I think that could play out a really fun quipping back and forth.
Sen, you had mentioned like seeing these tools as a way to kind of construct stories on your own.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear more about that. I feel like we have talked a little bit about like playing games as a way to generate OCs, but I don't know that we've ever talked to anyone that like actively tells stories for a living about how reading games influences their like ongoing storytelling.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I feel like I just think a lot about archetypes and tropes and how my own characters and worlds play into those things. Because I think it's fun to play into them and lean into them and then also lean out of them and then like shift, like turn those things on their head sort of thing. And So part of what I really liked, even just reading through the playbooks about the different archetypes, the different sort of like tropey things happening, was how these very much do give you just like that starting place for this type of character that shows up in so many different shows, especially shows like the Monster of the Week sort of format of like, this is what's happening in this episode, and then the next episode is a whole different thing happening. And so, yeah, and I think that the sort of the structure that it offers for the Keeper and for the different arcs of, I don't remember what they called it, but that's like the sunset to midnight or whatever thing.
Yeah.
I thought that was a useful way to set up even just like a short story or something.
The countdown.
Yeah. As sort of like the outline and the like impending threat that happens as you go on.
I think the countdowns, to talk about like gameable moments, the countdowns are a thing. That's another list that I just want. and maybe that's just because like I've gotten to the point where playing games where like if I'm going to read a book, I want the book to have a bunch of stuff I can pull out and then just use directly at the table, not frameworks for making my own stuff, because making my own stuff isn't the hard part for me, you know? Or like thinking about how to frame my own stuff isn't the hard part. It's the like what is the thing that saves me time? And that time is usually like compelling pick lists or whatever. But the countdown is like this, this idea that like, as time goes on, things will happen, things will get worse. And it's just like a list of events that goes and they have it.
Right. Here's when the eggs will hatch. Here's when they will go after the
such and such
victim.
Will go missing or And it's structured as like day, shadow, sunset, dusk, nightfall, midnight,
which I would never be able to remember the order of. I wish it was just a clock.
It can just be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. It doesn't have to be.
Well, and I think that sort of speaks to your kind of view of this game as a reskinning of Apocalypse World. I do feel like when people start to initially reskin games as like their first steps into game design, they're like, I have to change the names of everything.
Gotta change the nouns. I just gotta change the nouns.
Exactly.
And then it's
so
a new
instead
game.
Of stats, it's called ratings. And it's like, why?
They're just stats, why? My dude. They're not. It's not. You don't have to. You did. This is like a note to everybody who is doing a game design. I guarantee you have done enough to make it your own unique thing. You do not need to change the words for default parts of games. It's not a thing. If you like have like change the stat names, sure, right? But like what they are as a tool or a mechanic does not need to have a new name. In fact, I would argue that like conflicts.
I was confused by it. I saw like rating and I thought, oh, is it going to be a helpful tool for like movie ratings and TV ratings, because they keep talking about framing stuff, and I was like, oh, this will be a fun, because like we're playing Buffy, it's rated PG, versus we're playing X-Files, which is more PG-13.
Also, they're not your ratings, right? Like that is a word that means a thing already.
Yeah, no, I'm rated -1 in Smuts.
You're like, fuck off.
I went to the USDA and I am prime AAA beef, but -1 Smarts.
Like if you said what are your ratings and there was a character part where you had to put like PG-13, I'd be like, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
You know? But like you're pulling on this already understood concept and then you're inverting it in a way that is not comfortable at all. Like the countdown. It's a countdown. At least make it like you could just even make it times if you want it to be times of day, you know? But
I actually didn't realize it was the stats were called ratings until later in the book when I was talking about all these things and ratings. And I was like, what was ratings? How did I miss ratings? And then I went back and I was like, oh, you're just talking about the stats. Why would you confuse me like this?
Why would you do a psychic damage to me? Why?
Literally.
I do think, so the I think it's interesting. This goes back to a thing that was already discussed, but like the idea of this framework as it relates to crafting a story. You know, like I am kind of curious about like, so the creating your mystery framework that is presented in the book has a few steps, and it says a mystery is made up of six basic elements. You can create them in any order, but I'll show you the order I usually use. A basic concept for the mystery, the hook that got the hunter's attention, the monster, the minions, bystanders, and locations that are involved, the mystery countdown, and then optionally custom moves for special aspects of the mystery, which I think is useless, but it's a lot of brain work, custom moves.
But I make custom moves on accident every day, so I actually love that part.
Yeah, but you're just going to do that. You're not going to play this game and make custom moves. You're just going to make people play your custom move game.
That'll be weird. That's true.
There's already so many moves. That's the value of this game, though. What I'm paying you for is the moves that you put time and effort into making, not telling me to make my own. Anyway, one of my first notes was I hate when you say you can change all these things before telling me what the things are. So this book says introduces teams and then says, here's how you customize your team before telling me what a team is. And they do that a couple times. And that's one of those, I don't need all the permissions to change the game. What I want is for you to tell me succinctly the cool brain thing that you came up with. That's cool. That's your game. Leave that in there. But that's besides the point. The creating your first mystery, that flow feels like it would be really useful for writing an actual story. Is that was it mainly the characters that got you thinking, Sen, or was there this
I also want to know if you've ever rolled dice to decide what happens in your comic.
I have not.
New challenge.
But yes, I have not for my comic. I have for sort of tangential things related to, because I will take any excuse to roll dice to make a decision. I just love my shiny dice. But... yeah, I think the characters, but then also I think that structure and what you're talking about how it talks about setting up a mystery, I feel like those were all really useful writing tips, right? And even where it talks about arcs a little bit, which does all just feel like sort of tips on writing how that story would go, not necessarily how you customize that depending on how your characters or your players react, right? But the initial setup for that feels useful as a writing tip. And similarly, just the arcs part, I agree that felt a little repetitive, but I do feel like there are a couple of things in there where I was talking about incorporating arcs for each of the heroes and sort of examples of what that could possibly look like that I felt was a little bit helpful. Just to be able to get everyone's different stories in there, but then also connect them, because I love an overarching mystery and overarching arc for games and for more episodic stories that are told like this. Also, that's what keeps me invested is, okay, but this little breadcrumb then is related to this next thing, which then snowballs into the end climax, whatever, of the whole story, right? So I thought those things were a little bit helpful in possibly running a game and just telling a story.
So it's two against one, Max. We like
it. I mean, fine. Prove it. Play. Pick this game off your shelf the next time you're looking for a game, Aaron.
Listen, this podcast is not about playing games. It's about reading them.
I know. Listen, we all agree this was a horrible reading experience.
A bad but useful experience.
Yeah, it's I do think there's lots of good stuff. I like that the monsters, there's the monster types, I think, are helpful and gameable, especially if you're looking for something that, if you're looking for a starting place, right? So the monster types are beast, breeder, collector, destroyer, devourer, executioner, parasite, queen, sorcerer, tempter, torturer, and trickster. And they all come with a motivation, which I think is motivations are good and gameable.
Yes. Some moves as well for the GM, the keeper, to make.
Yes, yeah. I feel less attached to those, but because they usually are just more specific applications of the general GM moves. Yeah. But I do, yeah. I feel like I don't know how to describe the soft skills of mechanics this might just be because my brain is a little borked, but like this, like a motivation is not a mechanic, but they feel like the more useful, actually gameable things that come up in play than many of the mechanics, you know?
Right. Because it helps, it gives the GM like some foundation on how to react to player choices.
Yes. And often they're like better than a role for helping you like direct, like they almost feel like they should be identified as mechanics on some level. Yeah. And all of the, like all of the different kinds of threats have these like motivations. And some of the, is it like a bystander one? I can't find it now, but there's a bystander one that's potentially to like put themselves in harm or yes. like in harm's way. And I was like, that's cute. Just like this person is just always going to be, it felt like a, like it's a meta motivation, you know, like it's not like.
Right. It's the character in the cold open of X-Files. Like they're all hanging out outside the bar and he's like, I got to go take a leak and like walks off into the dark woods. And it's like, okay, I see where this is going. It has, it's an important narrative step for these kinds of games.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So I actually think they are good. The bystander, the types of bystanders: busybody, detective, gossip, helper, innocent, official. The official motivation is to be suspicious. skeptic, to deny supernatural explanations, which I think is a hilarious. That I feel like could almost be a player motivation in a way that would be very fun. Victim, to put themselves in danger, and witness, to reveal information. So those I feel like are, those are good.
Yeah.
I like them. So I do feel like, I do feel like there's a bunch of tools in there that are kind of helpful.
Right. I think, yeah, like a big problem that I have is like, you just told me those things. I remember reading them. If I want to now go look for them, I don't remember if they're in one of the sample adventures, in the keeper section, in the, you know, like filling your first session section. Like, I wish all those kind of tools were collected in one place with a clear and logical progression.
Absolutely. This is actually one of the things I was just about to say, because I was also going through and I was like, wow, where is that section? And I feel like like this book is meant to be a reference.
Yes.
And the organization really throws me off. I'm like, I don't know where I found those things. I have some notes about things that I really enjoyed, and I can go to the index and try to track down where that was mentioned.
Right.
But otherwise, because
they're mentioned in many places, the index is just like bystanders, page 25, 92, 135. And it's just like, I don't know.
Exactly.
I don't know which one.
Even if there I like Apple F it or whatever, right? Like Control F, I can't find the thing that I'm looking for quickly.
There are major chapter headings, one of which is called On with the Mystery, and one is which As the Game Goes On, and those are useless chapter headings. Yeah. And they repeat, and the first sub chapter in the chapter As the Game Goes On is at the end of each mystery, and then checking your arcs, and it's just one of these like, there are so many of them repeat themselves and are in like, they're just, it's wildly organized. It is wildly organized in a way that I was like, it, reading this book made it feel unplayable. And as we talk about it and dissect it, I'm like, no, actually, like, you guys are convincing me and reminding me, like, there is good stuff in there. But if I read this book and tried to run it, I would be like, this is impossible. Yeah. This is, why are the hunter basic moves after the GMing section? Why is that a thing?
No.
You know? Why is there 96 pages until the game is a conversation? That is like page 3 of every other book we've ever read. What is an RPG? How do you play one? What is this one? You know, like that. I actually have been, this is like a larger statement that I have about RPGs in general, but like I have been going through some of my books recently and getting rid of a bunch and seeing which ones I want to play. And people, please put a summary on the back of your book, or really in the first page or two. I do not want to be responsible for remembering what your gamer adventure is about based on your like strange text display on the front. Like, I'm here for you making your like artistic visual stuff, but like, give me a summary of things, which like, of course, all the published games generally do. But like, yeah. There being a forward and then just like a full, I don't know. It feels, and maybe this is because a lot of like PBTA games like put, like, I feel like where you put the playbooks in PBTA games seems like it's like a highly contentious topic based on which PBTA designer you're talking to.
Sometimes they're not in the book at all.
Oh, this is only the best games keep them out of the main book. Because it is wild to start with like the 90 pages of, I mean, one, why are the playbooks like 6 pages each? And so why do you have like 90 pages of playbooks? But that's why it doesn't like get into what the game is until you're through the playbooks. And if you're a person who hasn't played a Powered by the Apocalypse game before, I think jumping right into a playbooks before, like, for example, introducing the basic moves and explaining them seems a little weird to me.
Yeah.
I was definitely confused when it was talking about all the moves that you could do. And I was like, I have not seen this list of basic moves yet, and I do not know what the basic moves are yet, but they keep referencing them.
Yes,
it's because they're on a page 175
or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the thing, let's see here, my other biggest complaint, I can't find my exact note, but it sort of describes, like, you'll use a move when there's drama or when you aren't sure what can happen, but, like, that's just not true. Like, all the moves have a very specific trigger as to when they happen. And I do feel like this is part of, like, it being an off-ramp of D&D, where D&D explains you should roll the dice when you're unsure what happens or when it's dramatic to roll them. And that's not how these games work.
That's how you get the pick list.
Yeah.
Well, that's how, like, when we've talked in the past about how, like, sometimes I had a hard time onboarding with PBTA moves is because I'm used to, when I was used to looking at D&D and being, here are the actions I can do, which one should I pick for this moment, right? Like, what you're describing is the moment when you look at your list and are like, what can I do in this moment, as opposed to I'm in the fiction and they come up naturally.
Right. Yeah, I don't
know.
Sorry,
I cut you off. You always forget.
I don't remember. I always forget.
Already forgot.
I never remember. I'm a waste. I'm a crawling zombie.
I feel like the moves are fine, but kind of bland. Like, I can't imagine wanting to do, I feel this way about all basic moves, I can't imagine wanting to do them when I have the options of a more exciting.
You don't want to kick some ass?
Not usually.
But you've sworn revenge on so many people.
That's, yeah, and I chose to do a podcast about it, not become a warrior or whatever.
Microphone warrior.
Listen, my mother playbook was one of the lesbian Avengers. This is not.
Yeah,
I was raised by some weird women. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I understand why they are what they are, but I think I, you know, kind of always return to this wanting things to be really specific and unique to the context and less generic. And if they're gonna be, like, I just want PBTA moves that result in a question to have really interesting questions. Is that too much to ask?
There's also no equivalent to, like, the read a person move in this list of basic moves, only, which is really interesting to me. That when I ran this game, one thing the players requested was, like, we want to know more about these people. Can we have a move about interacting with them?
You can only manipulate them. That is the only way you can interact with people non-violently.
Well, I mean, or the other rules version would be, I'll just tell you about them. You don't have to roll, you know, like, that's ostensibly an interpretation of the rules. Like, they didn't want to move because these are investigators that deal with bigger than normal things. They should, I don't know.
I think that logic could be applied to read a bad situation, though. Like, if the logic is you don't need to roll to see what's in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, I think that like misses the fun part about what, like, PBTA moves can be, right? Because, like, I love good PBTA moves that give you questions to ask, like, that's the currency that you get and as a result of rolling. I think that's, like, super compelling game design, right? Like, I would, that for me, that is, like, the most interesting part of the PBTA game. Is the idea that, like, there's so many of these moves where you get to ask two questions and they have to be answered honestly, and it becomes this, like, I don't know, it's just a really high tension, high fun moment, and then I don't have to always think about those questions myself. Like, it really helps me as a player be like, I can keep progressing this forward without being put on the spot in that way, and it's still fun. And so I feel like they're, I don't know, to me, that is the best place where moves live. And so the lack of, like, let me ask about a person feels like a big one. Like, it feels like a big lack. And, like, sure, you could ask whatever you want, but I think that that removes some of the fun place where these games kind of, like, live or whatever. I don't know.
50-minute check-in. Should we wrap it up?
I feel like we didn't. I feel like we barely talked at all.
Sen, did you have other notes of stuff we didn't cover?
Let me check my notes.
I have one other thing that I hate, but that doesn't feel helpful.
Well, yeah, one of the things that I have is something that I thought was just slightly annoying and was in all of the playbooks was the look.
This is literally my note. This is my last uncommented
amazing.
Note.
Amazing. yeah, pick one from each list. Man, woman, and then something else. Occasionally it's man, woman, boy, girl, and then something else.
I think one of them is man, woman, asexual, androgynous.
Yep. Yes.
The look of asexual.
Yep, that was literally, I was like, oh. All seven of these other things that are not man or woman, or boy or girl, apply to me. And also, what does an asexual look like? I get what they're trying. I know what they're trying to do.
Right,
but
they're hoping for like some sort of inclusivity, right? Mm-hmm. These
well,
people
yes, and
exist
by asexual,
here too.
By asexual, it's the divine. So they mean sexless, I assume, or something like, you know, something like that.
Right.
But yes, the seven others I wrote down are androgynous, concealed, asexual, indeterminate, transgressive, masked, and mysterious.
Which would be fine if you took out the man and woman. If you just got rid of man and woman and left, oh, here's a list of adjectives, like every other good Powered by the Apocalypse game does with looks. Yes, this is like an established convention. Give me some fruitful, evocative words in the looks section. Man and woman are
beefy.
Not fruitful and evocative.
Fruitful. I look fruitful.
For 2015, especially, it feels very cisgender of them. Because, yes, what does it look like to, or what does it mean to look like a man or to look like a woman?
Yeah, it's really bad. It's a bad foot to start on, for sure. But again, we're not reading Thirsty Sword Lesbians, so whatever. If I was going to play this game, if I wanted to play a monster game, I'd play use Thirsty Sword Lesbians anyway. Maybe that's me starting the appendix in early. Thirsty Sword Lesbians game than
we can get to that.
Monster of the Week. And I'm not just saying that because I obviously have a brand. It just is all around better.
Thirsty Sword Lesbians by, I think, April Kit Walsh. If
you're
going to
give Evil Hat your money, give it to Thirsty Sword Lesbians. Even the other look things weren't like that evocative, you know, like for something that is so, I wanted the looks to mimic a little bit that like that weakness of monologuing, because that weakness of monologuing is so, it's not just like, oh, this is fun to play. It's like, oh, I can picture every villain in every movie where that's been the case, right? Like you instantly get this flash of like media and reference and stereotype.
But to be fair, a lot of the archetypes in this, I imagine, like when I think about Buffy or X-Files or whatever, it's just a bunch of cis white people who who I would be like, yes, man. Which is not defending the choice.
Yeah, like Supernatural
is,
there's a man and another man. There's some man-shaped men in
that
show.
Maybe the solution is like, look, Keith, Barry, Tim.
Yeah, like lead, if you're gonna go into those stereotypes, like because like Supernatural is a really great example, because like you just have these two dudes being dudes, and like they're the most guyish bros, literal bros, like just super, just here's some bros hunting some monsters, and it's very charming because of how they're just guys doing stuff, you know, and like so you can do that, right? Like you could even decide that some of these playbooks are gendered. Hot take. I think you can when you have a bazillion playbooks.
Sagas of the Icelanders has gendered playbooks and it does it really well. That's by Gregor Vuga if you want to look into it.
I love that
game.
Yeah, like I totally think you can do that. Even if it's just like I'm gendering it not like explicitly, you know, like I'm using kind of like words that have gendered connotations to them.
Like how Jason Morningstar calls everyone guys in Fiesta.
Yeah, exactly. You think that's totally good. That's the good way. Yeah, that's the really good way to talk about people, is to call everyone guys. But like the Chosen, for example, the clothing options are preppy clothes, casual wear, urban wear, normal clothes, neat clothes, street wear. Those are not discernibly different from one another for the most part, right? Like those don't tell me. I get that you're trying to go on a theme, but like, why give me a list if it's just like, I don't know, he looks like a dude in high school, you know? Like, it's not. They just kind of all lead to the same thing, which is funny because there are so many other moments in this book where like it is very pinpointed at, but maybe that's because in shows like Buffy and Supernatural and all the media we're referencing, everything interesting, everything unique, everything evocative comes from the villainry.
Yeah.
Right. Like that's why queers like it. Why there's the whole history of like queers as monstrous, you know, is like, 'cause everything kind of interesting and cool happens in the baddies. Which is like maybe why this doesn't speak to me so much, just because I would rather be the baddies than not the baddies, but you know, whatever.
You are the monster of the week, Max.
Dirty clothes, rumpled suit, casual clothes, practical clothes,
super. I want the podcast to end with you just saying all these weird clothes.
Just me reading the clothes, just a list of clothes forever. Old fashioned clothes, once again, casual clothes. I'm taking over the quote part of this episode.
My Appendix Now recommendation is Oddity Roadshow, an actual play podcast using the Monster of the Week system. You can find it at oddityroadshow.com. It's GM'd by Joel Ruiz. There's three cool players. They used to do this podcast called Critical Bits, which was like a masks teen superhero that delved into weird body horror. And now they're just going hard into that. It's a very fun show, and it's new enough that there's not a huge intimidating backlog. You can get started. You will immediately know whether you like it or not. I also think it's interesting because the GM runs things in ways I would not. Like, he does occasionally just say, like, roll weird, which is, like, quote-unquote, against the rules of this game. But like, it's a tight crew that is very fun, and it works. It's an example of, like, you don't, as much as I'm a stickler for these rules, you don't have to do it.
Arguably every good game in the history of the Earth just kind of ignores a bunch of rules of the game they're playing. But
yeah. All right, Sen, what do you got for us?
I feel like you gotta have comics. I'm expecting a bazillion comics, a bazillion shows. I'm not putting pressure on you.
I don't have that. I was just trying to narrow it down to something that's not listed in the book because it lists so many of the things that it's taking things from.
You can spotlight one of those.
I feel like we have to like anti-spotlight. Like Max, you talked about, or you mentioned how much you watch Buffy, possibly against your will. And we never asterisk, like, said throw Joss Whedon, the trash fireman, into the trash fire.
Yeah, I feel like we've said that somewhere on this show before, but if we haven't, great. Yeah.
I'm just putting a little star there. Yes, because I did watch Buffy a lot growing up, and both of my will and not against my will, but just sort of passively while other people are watching it.
Yeah.
So yes, that little asterisk. But I think the one that I thought of that has at least a little bit of queer stuff going on, because I love to throw that in there, is just Lost Girl, which feels like it's very episodic.
What's that? I don't know what this is.
Oh, it's a show. I don't know what years it's from. But it's a show that's following this succubus, and she's the like chosen one sort of role, and it's just very like each episode sort of a new like mystery happens. It's not always like hunting down and destroying the monster. Sometimes it's figuring out what they need or whatever. But it did remind me of the very like you could slot it into a similar structure.
Can I read the first couple sentences of the Lost Girl Wikipedia article?
Please.
Lost Girl is a Canadian supernatural drama television series, premiered on Showcase, ran for 5 seasons. It follows the life of a bisexual succubus named Beau.
There you go.
Great. Perfect. That's enough. That is enough for it. I actually haven't watched Lost Girl, and I feel like I should, because like, I'm a Canadian, and so it comes up a lot. People reference it a lot, and I've still like never gotten around to it. Yeah, definitely throw Whedon just off a cliff somewhere. But
if you don't learn his weakness first, he will come back.
He will come back. We haven't discovered it yet, as he keeps existing, so yet to be discovered. I also I have these conversations because I'm also like, I think, I don't, Sam, I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming everybody in this chat is like of the Buffy age. And
do you mean we're in high school but we look 30?
Yeah. Exactly. I didn't get it. I didn't get it. I watched a lot of Buffy and I didn't get it. Is what I'm saying. I didn't understand why everybody around me was like, this is so great. I was like, weird. I like monsters, but all these heterosexual people being fucking idiots and assholes to one another is not compelling to me. So, you know, whatever. Yeah, my recommendation actually is...
Wait, recommendation was Thirsty Sword Lesbians.
Well, yes, I did say that, but I do have a good book. Oh. If people want a monster book. It is not a Monster of the Week book, and it is not a book I've read recently. And so if it's terrible, don't at me. As we've said before, don't at me anyway. But it is a book called The Gilda Stories. It is by Jewel Gomez. It follows a black lesbian vampire throughout history. Like, it uses the framing of vampire to like jump in periods in time quite a bit, and goes quite a bit back and then a little bit into the future. And so it has like a little bit of a episodic vibe to it, but also the it is written from the perspective of vampires, and it's cool and neat, and I liked it.
That sounds cool.
I gotta check it out.
Sen, tell us once more where people can find you, and tell us about Skyvane.
Yes. You can read Skyvane on the web at skyvanecomic.com, or if you're a Tapas or Webtoons reader, it's also on there. And it is about a band of magical misfits fighting back against an authoritarian regime to reclaim their magic and salvage what's left of their broken world. Actually, Monster of the Week, sort of related. It has lots of like mythological sort of creatures, selkies, firebirds, kitsune, that kind of thing in it. That's kind of the brand of magic that's happening.
Because you're an expert.
Yes, exactly. Actually, I have done deep dives of Wikipedia articles into so many different mythological creatures for the reason. So, yeah. That's my expertise. And if you are local to Minnesota and you want to come and get a tattoo for me, I just released a very nerdy Our Flag Means Death flash sheet, because it is my very favorite show from last year. And you can find all those things on my Instagram at goth.holiday.
Why am I not in Minnesota? I could see you both and also get an impulse. I have a lot of tattoos, many of which are impulse tattoos. And so I'm of the low key, get the tattoo. And if you regret it later, you got to shift your mindset, not your tattoos.
Well, if you need a tattoo that you want to shift your mindset about it later, Max, you should come visit.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, some of the tattoos I've gotten that like had meaning, I know I'm like, oh, fuck that. And the tattoos that I've gotten that were a joke, I'm like, I still love this. 10 years on, this is still amazing. But, you know, as it were.
All right, that's it. Join our Discord if you want to at us. I'll just mute you anyway in Discord. I'm just kidding. There's a link to our Discord. Next time we are reading Mutants in the Now by Julian Kay. Mutants are monsters, and these monsters are, you know, mutants. It's a love letter to the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles role-playing game from Playdium, but also like the really cool comics that are coming out now with art by Sophie Campbell. I am inevitably going to talk about the greatest film ever, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the 1990 live action movie. So maybe rewatch that before you listen to next episode. And go buy Mutants movies. In the Now on itch.io.
Ratty clothes, casual clothes, rumpled suit, neat clothes, comfortable clothes, army surplus gear.
Keith clothes, boy clothes, Buffy clothes, monster clothes.
Just a whole book of clothes.